The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. Welcome to a brand new week, a brand new month. And hopefully things will go off without a hitch today. If you notice a slight delay, for those of you watching one of the video streams, we're trying this again. You may recall it was a few months ago. I tried to upgrade my video streaming software, and there was a problem in that the sync was off. And the longer the program went on, the further the delay became. Well, I got an email from Telestream, who, the company that makes this software that I use called Wirecast, saying, we've got a new update. It's version 14.1, and I think we fixed the bugs. Already I'm seeing a little bit of a change in the sync. I'm going to keep my fingers crossed because everything else about this upgrade is working great. But if the sync gets any longer than it is now, it's going to be really distracting. So you guys let me know. Oh, Manicler in the YouTube chat room says, this is my first trip to the Nicole Sandler Show. Well, Manicler, we'll try to take it easy on you. I hope it's good for you because we're going to have fun. We're going to have fun. Tom Hartman is our guest today. You all know Tom Hartman. He kind of needs no introduction. But radio talk show host, obsequious talk show host. He's everywhere, right? And author. And his newest book is out. It's called The Hidden History of American Oligarchy, Reclaiming Our Democracy from the Ruling Class. And admittedly, I'm not very far into it. But we've been living it for a while. So we'll talk with Tom Hartman a little later. I do have a few things that I'm slightly perturbed about, some more than others. You know, little things like, and I guess some things that I realize I shouldn't be upset about. Like I noticed a tweet from the Philadelphia Inquirer that they have cut off, starting today, no more comment section on Inquirer.com. And at first I thought, well, that's kind of messed up. I mean, you should be able to comment. Until I read their explanation. And it says, commenting on Inquirer.com was long ago hijacked by a small group of trolls who traffic in racism, misogyny, and homophobia. This group comprises a tiny fraction of the Inquirer.com audience, but its impact is disproportionate and enduring. It's not just Inquirer staff who are disaffected by the comments on many stories. We routinely hear from members of our community that the comments are alienating and detract from the journalism we publish. And so I tweeted at my friend Will Bunch, who is a columnist based at Philadelphia Inquirer, and I said, what do you think about this? And he said, long overdue. Okay, good. I love it when something plays out that easily. I'm with you. Good for you. Because the trolls do overtake the comments on so many different sites. And most of the time, I just don't read them because they are so disturbing. All right. So that's one thing. Crisis averted. But in other things, it's not that easy. In fact, one video that I saw got me really, really freaked out, as it should. And I'm guessing if you saw it, you were kind of pissed off as well. And for this, we go to Rochester, New York, where the police have had other problems, too. But this time, they pepper sprayed a 9-year-old girl who was already in the back of the squad car with her hands handcuffed behind her back. Now, I'm going to show you the video. If you're watching on one of the video streams, you'll see it. If not, you'll hear me kind of narrating what's going on because it is truly disturbing. And what you can see, Hartman, ubiquitous, not obsequious. Thank you. I used the wrong term. I meant ubiquitous. I meant everywhere. Omnipotent was the first word that I used. Omnipotent is everywhere. Don't look at, you're shaking your head, David. All right, hold on. Omnipotent, I know, works. I have my trusty dictionary. Hold on. Obsequious is wrong. You're right. I meant ubiquitous. But omnipotent means he's everywhere. And I believe that's the word I was thinking of. Now it's going to bug me. Hold on. Omnipotent. Having unlimited power, authority, or force, all powerful. All right, I guess that's not what I meant either. I guess I meant ubiquitous. Tom Hartman, who's everywhere.
That's what I meant.
All right, sorry. I hate it when I'm wrong, but please correct me when I'm wrong, because I hate sounding like an idiot, which I do occasionally. I'll admit it. I'm Nicole, and sometimes I'm really fucking stupid. All right, anyway, back to this. Rochester, New York. In this case, I'm not wrong. So apparently this 9-year-old little girl was having a meltdown. The family called the police because they were afraid she would endanger herself or someone else. The police came. This is why there needs to be another agency you can call when there's a mental health problem and not the police, because oftentimes they're not trained nor are they qualified to handle a situation like this. So this little girl's 9 years old. And at the beginning, and it doesn't show on this video, but other videos I've seen, she's outside of the car and she's on the ground and they're struggling with her and she's crying, "Get my father. I want my dad. Get my dad." Well, now it cuts to this part of the video and she's in the back of the car and you see there's a female cop on the opposite side of the car where the little girl is sitting. And there's a male cop on the side of the car closest to us. And the male cop keeps screaming, just pepper spray her, just spray her already. Now, thankfully, I want to make sure that the subtitles show, because this video that I'm about to play for you does, I believe, have subtitles on it. I just want to make sure I have enough on the screen showing. All right, so let's do this. All right. So let me go here and I'm going to play the video for you. And you can see, right? I think you can see when I move around on the screen that that's the female cop. And the little girl's face is blurred because, you know, she's 9 years old. All right. So here's the video. Let me turn the sound up.
Come on. I'm going to punch you when I don't want to. Sit back. Sit back. Come on.
I want my dad.
Come on, let's go.
No, I want my dad.
I'm gonna go get him. Now sit back.
Now they're telling her sit back. The woman is being nice to her.
Just stop for a
second. Dear White.
Take your deep breath.
What?
Hey, just stop.
I will get your dad.
No, you said that you were gonna pepper spray me. No, please, no. Stop.
You said you were gonna pepper spray me. Please don't stop.
I got a bad
heart. Just spray her.
Then the male cop says, just spray her at this point. The female cop drops her bottle of pepper spray. Here. So the male cop says, here, and he sprays her.
I got her.
And she's screaming, please wipe my eyes. Wipe my eyes. And they're outside of the car. And the one male cop says, unbelievable. I'll say unbelievable. And then, to make matters worse, to add insult to injury, the police chief of the Rochester police force then gets up and I guess speaks to the press. And, let me share this with you.
Came to the scene shortly thereafter. They were trying to get her into the car.
She was in the car.
He made a decision there that he thought was the best that could
really
take. You know, it resulted in her no injury.
No injury? What?
If had they had to go and push further and use more force, there's a good chance she could have been hurt worse.
Are you fucking kidding me? Let's say, you know, excuse me. First of all, she was already in the back seat of the car. Her hands were handcuffed behind her back, so much so that after they pepper sprayed her eyes, she was screaming, wipe my eyes, please wipe my eyes. As somebody who's been sprayed in the eyes with pepper spray, in my case, it was pepper foam, Don't tell me she wasn't injured. I want to see this guy held down with pepper spray sprayed in his eyes. And then he can tell me if he was injured or not. How dare he? Deep breath. I am livid. This is, without a doubt, unfucking believable. And this damn cop dares to say she wasn't hurt. If we had to use other force, what did you need force for? She was in the back of the car. So she was arguing with the cops, so you pepper spray her? And this police chief is defending it? Yes, you're right. Ron Zindel in the chat room says, that girl will be traumatized for the rest of her life. Thanks to these brutal police, we are one sick society. Unbelievable. I have been pepper sprayed in my eyes, and I can tell you, that little girl was hurt. And she couldn't even wipe her eyes, and then they shut the doors to the car, and they're out there going, unbelievable. I'll tell you what's unbelievable. Put me in a room with that cop. I may be locked up for the rest of my life, but put me in a room with that cop. I guess I shouldn't have started that way. Because I haven't been this pissed off in a long time. But I am. And there are a few other things that have me angry, too. I guess we should move on to those. Should we? How about we talk about this? Let me pull. Sorry, it'll get better. I promise. I've got something funny I can play. We'll lighten up. We have Tom Hartman coming on. We're going to talk about the oligarchs. That'll piss me off, too. But I'm beyond pissed off. All right. The next thing I'm angry about. Bipartisanship. Anyone else feeling the deja vu all over again? When Barack Obama took office, what was it, 12 years ago now? And he said, we're going to work. It's a post-partisan, time. We're going to work with both sides. The other side wanted nothing to do with him. Then for the last 4 years, we lived under the Trump regime, who anybody who was a Democrat was an enemy of the people, just like the media. Anybody who wasn't a Republican, who wasn't a Trump-ublican, was an enemy. They were enemies of the state. They were not to be, they were to be ignored. I mean, blue states, he was ready to write off. Any blue state doesn't get help with fire relief or anything else because he split the country in half like that. Joe Biden is at least trying to be magnanimous and is saying, look, I'm your president. I represent everybody. Luetta Wilson, that might have been the police union press conference that I saw. It might not have been the Rochester police captain because I thought that was the police union president. Either way, it pisses me off. And I hope Andrew Cuomo does something about it, although I don't have much faith in Andrew Cuomo these days either. I'm just stunned. And by the way, the video that I played that from, I know I'm jumping around, sorry, is from the foreign press agency, and the caption they had written on it was American police brutalized child in custody or something like that. It was a French news agency. Yeah. All right. But now let's move on to here's that video. Okay. So bipartisanship. So Joe Biden today, in the spirit of bipartisanship, is meeting with 10 Senate Republicans. Is Tim Kaine one of them? Oh, I forget. He was the last vice presidential Democratic nominee. I don't understand it. Anyway, who unveiled today their own $618 billion COVID rescue plan. That's less than one-third of the Democrats' deal. That should be the bottom, not some aspirational goal. That should be their basement. Anyway, so what they want to do is meet with Biden to get him to negotiate away everything that he's promised. And then if he doesn't, they'll call foul on his unity pledge. So in the wake of the Republicans threatening, and this was reported on in the New York Times today, that their intention, regardless of what the Democrats do, is to ramp up the gerrymandering process next year, because the census will be done and because we Democrats stupidly didn't vote for Democrats on the state level, Republicans still control many states, at least 18 of them, and the redistricting that comes with them. They could conceivably win back the House in 2022 just by gerrymandering. But this call for bipartisanship, Aaron Rupar of Vox tweeted out today, why is there this weird obsession with bipartisanship only when the Democrats have power? I don't remember anybody grilling Republicans in early 2017 about why they weren't bending over backwards to work with Democrats. Think about it. Never once did Donald Trump or any of his minions, and yes, I'm reclaiming the word minions, they're not Disney characters, they're lemmings, and Trump's got many of them. Maybe I should just call them lemmings, because otherwise you're going to picture these yellow furry creatures. So Trump's lemmings are all screaming bipartisanship, but when Trump was in power, that word was not in their vocabulary. Well, I don't have much use for some of the shows on MSNBC, but one guy they have on there, Eddie Glaude Jr., is pretty brilliant. And listen to what he had to say. I guess, I don't know when this was. It must have been Friday, about bipartisanship, because he hit the nail on the head.
One thing to call for bipartisanship. It makes sense to me on a certain level. But bipartisanship, just as agreement and disagreement, must presume a set of background conditions that allow us to disagree.
Yeah.
In other words, what I mean by this, if you have some among us who are willing to throw democracy into the trash bin in the name of a view that this country must remain white, it must remain in the hands of a particular segment of the population, and they're willing to throw democracy away in the name of that, there is no ground to have bipartisan relationships with them.
You think?
There's no basis to compromise with them. Because if you do, you become complicit in undermining the very foundations of American democracy. So we got to get clear on those folk who agree to the background conditions for us doing work in this country. That is, they agree to the basic principles of democratic life in this country. And we know that a whole bunch of folk, not only do they not agree with the facts, Nicole, they don't agree with the very principles of democracy themselves.
Hello.
That's the key. They are not Democrats, small d. Mm-hmm. They don't believe in who we are as a country. And we need to understand that. And I'm talking directly to Tucker Carlson. I'm talking directly to Sean Hannity. I'm talking directly to Mitch McConnell. I'm talking directly to Kevin McCarthy. I'm talking directly to all of these folk who are willing to throw this country away. Just as those folk in the South were willing to rebel and killed over 600,000 people because they didn't believe in it. That's what we have to do, Nicole.
Yeah.
That's the ground for us to begin to do the work to salvage this place and imagine it otherwise. I know that was a bit emotional, but I guess that's what I do.
Well, that's what was called for. And thank you, Eddie Glaude. And I wasn't the Nicole he was talking to. He was on Nicole Wallace's show, but I'll take it. He makes so much sense, unlike these Neanderthals in Congress. So here's the third thing I'm up in ire about. I was going to say arms, but I don't have arms. I don't want arms. I'm perturbed about the growing anger at Liz Cheney for her vote to impeach Donald Trump. The calls in the Republican Party for her to be kicked out of the party, while you have Matt Gaetz going to Wyoming to campaign against her, and it's the election's not for almost 2 years. So there's all this outrage over Liz Cheney and the other nine Republicans with some conscience who voted to impeach Donald Trump in the House. As he deserved to be, he incited an insurrection. It's insurrection. Somebody else called it an insurrection on TV today, too. These are professional speakers. They get paid to speak. Insurrection. I know that erection is on men's minds a lot, but insurrection. Anyway, they're all up in arms over Liz Cheney and the other nine, but where's the outrage over Marjorie Taylor Greene, including her repeated denials that Joe Biden was actually elected, right? She still, she wears a mask on the floor of the house that says, that says Trump won. What? Yes, she did. I'm just, I know, omnipresent. I know people on Twitter are correcting my language too. I just opened up the Twitter page. I'm ubiquitous, omnipresent. That's what I meant. I want to see the outrage, but there is none. So Kevin McCarthy is supposed to talk with her this week. Really? He's going to have a talk to with her? What's he going to say? Keep up the good work? Just keep it on the down low? This woman is evil, but she had a phone call with Dear Leader this week that she's, you know, bragging about on the interwebs. She had a perfect phone call with Donald Trump. We are living in opposite world, and I know you've heard me talk about opposite world before, but this is it. And why the hell is Joe Biden bending over backwards to appease these people? That's what I would like to know. Marjorie Taylor Greene, look, at least she got us off of the Lauren Boebert and the Madison Caulfield creepoids who are also infecting the halls of Congress. And I'm sure there are others, but those are the three worst of the bunch. All right. My blood pressure, I went to the doctor on Friday morning. I had a doctor's appointment. My blood pressure was perfect. It was like 110 over 70. I don't want to take it now because I'm sure it's much higher. So we're going to bring it down with a little ditty that fits the topic. This is from our new friend, Bruce W. Nelson, who also goes by Mangy Felt Bottom or something like that. I always get it wrong, but it's my old age. It's my memory. Anyway, this is Bruce W. Nelson with a little song from Marjorie Taylor Greene. Sing along if you like. It's fine with me. All right. Bruce, take it away. Here we go.
The deep state would like you to think that the California wildfires were caused by drought and lightning. Yeah. Marjorie Taylor Greene knows the real answer. Changing climate. The threat isn't that at all. The threat's from the outer limits, and it's run by a cruel cabal. It's funded in part by Soros through internet sales of cheese. It's organized for one purpose, to bring us all to our knees. Space Jews with lasers, says Marjorie Taylor Greene. Space Jews with lasers, they're pretty high-tech and mean. Space Jews with lasers, they're serious hellraisers. Stand back and stand by. Space Jews with lasers. From white patriots who carry the big Trump flags and beat Capitol policemen requiring body bags. The real threat is stratospheric, with rays sent down from on high. While lightning is atmospheric, we could blame a Jewish guy. It's space Jews with lasers, says Marjorie Taylor. Space Jews with lasers, the evidence is all unseen. Space Jews with lasers, they're no naval gazers, so we will stand by. Space Jews with lasers. God. evil force at work here that's setting the woods on fire. The deep state says drought's the reason, but Q taught us to inquire. The pedophile baby eaters are likely the real root cause, and all of us bottom feeders believe it's simply because they're space Jews with lasers. They're targeting your hometown. Space Jews with lasers, but Marjorie will bring them down. Space Jews with lasers to stun, set your phasers. Stand back and stand by. Space Jews with lasers. Those space Jews with lasers. Oh no! Oh no, they're here! Space Jews with lasers. It's terrifying.
Why won't Marco Rubio condemn the terrorist attack on the U.S. Capitol? Because he is a co-conspirator.
The FBI is investigating after a pro-Trump convoy surrounded a Biden campaign bus in Texas.
He applauded them.
I saw yesterday a video of these people in Texas. Did you see it? We love what they did.
He encouraged them.
Here's the thing they don't know. We do that in Florida every day.
And they heard the message loud and clear. He's responsible for the death of a Capitol Police officer and the attempted murder of hundreds of lawmakers. Marco Rubio wants to let the domestic terrorists off the hook because he is one. Marco Rubio. Cowardly. Complicit. Weak on terror. Midas Touch is responsible.
That did say Midas Touch is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Sandler Show is 100% listener supported. Have you given yet? Nicole decided not to put her show behind a paywall, knowing that many can't afford the luxury of paying for a podcast. But if you're able to, she needs your financial support to continue doing this. Consider a monthly subscription. Give when you can. Just visit NicoleSandler.com/donate. Remember, she can't do this without you.
All right, it is Nicole Sandler back with you, and I just need to get I need to get Tom Hartman's. I've got Tom Hartman's book cover sort of up on here. I've got to get his shotgun. Tom, this is the problem when you are your own producer and you try to do video and audio at the same time. Sometimes you run into these problems. Actually, only I run into these problems. This is my thing. Give me 1 second. We can talk because it's still radio. So, hi, Tom Hartman.
Hey, Nicole.
How are you?
I'm great. I was my own producer for the first few years of my show. I know what you're going through.
Were you? It's crazy. Hold on. I think I have it here. You know what? I had the whole thing all set up, and I just screwed up my my screen here. So let's talk. And while we're talking, I will get the screenshot together so everyone can see. I can see you. And you see my backwards picture here. But Tom Hartman has another new book out. He is, I'm not going to make the same mistake. I used the wrong word before to describe you. And I meant to say ubiquitous. I meant to say omnipresent, and I used the wrong word. I won't even repeat it. But Tom Hartman, who seems to be everywhere because he does 3 hours a day on the radio, he does television, he writes books, and in fact, The Hidden History of American Oligarchy, Reclaiming Our Democracy from the Ruling Class, I believe is the fifth in your Hidden History series, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. And the sixth, which will follow it in about 6 months, is The Hidden History of American Healthcare.
Ah, okay. Looking forward to it, as I've enjoyed the other ones as well. So oligarchy is nothing new. I'll tell you what. In fact, while I'm trying to get this shot together, let me play a little something that I pulled. I thought I'd have time earlier. But Chris Hayes did a thing. This is a few years old already. But he attempted to explain what oligarchy was about. And I thought this was pretty good. And I'll get our shot together.
There are a few basic principles of democracy. One is that the will of the majority should determine what the government does, with some obvious restrictions. Today, that is not always the case. The will of the people has been tossed aside to make way for the will of an influential few. Here's an example. Last year, Senators Joe Manchin and Pat Toomey, a Democrat and a Republican, came up with legislation that would expand background checks and close loopholes in the current system. Most people thought this was a good idea.
90% of Americans, including a lot of gun owners, supported the idea of expanded background checks.
90% of Americans support universal checks.
88% of gun owners support background checks.
Democrats, 95%. Republicans, 87% in favor of background checks.
And even though the majority of people were behind the idea of background checks, an influential few were not.
The shooters in Aurora, the shooters in Newtown, they're unrecognizable. They're not going to be in the system. Who is going to be in the system? You and me.
Guess who won out in the end?
The gun control legislation that was supposed to tighten background checks was defeated today in the U.S. Senate.
The Manchin-Toomey Amendment was defeated despite broad popular support. And a new study out of Princeton and Northwestern University could explain why. Two political scientists looked at almost 2,000 policy cases over 20 years, trying to answer some basic questions. Does public opinion translate into actual policy? And whose opinion matters? They found that average citizens' preferences have essentially zero estimated impact upon policy change. You heard that right. The average voter's opinion just doesn't matter. So what does? Major business interest groups like the gun lobby and rich people. The researchers found that while the opinion of the average American has zero impact on policy, the opinions of economic elites have a very large, positive, independent impact. This is certainly not the democracy we learned about in school. In fact, it sounds like the textbook definition of oligarchy, or government by the few. So if the will of the people is not enough to get something popular like a background check bill passed, it's important to get a billionaire involved. Enter former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Yesterday, Bloomberg announced he'll be spending $50 million of his own money to build an organization to challenge the NRA and pursue an expansion of background checks.
This is not a battle of dollars. This is a battle for the hearts and minds of America so that we can protect our children, protect innocent people.
Because that's the way American politics works in 2014. If you want to get a broadly popular piece of legislation passed, you better find a billionaire, a powerful business interest group, who agrees with you.
So, Tom Hartman, I've got your picture up, at least. I'm just having all kinds of tech. It happens every time you're on the program. Usually, things don't go quite so horribly, but I'll figure it out.
Mercury went retrograde this year.
Figures. All right. So, this is my lot in life. Anyway, was that a pretty good explanation of the oligarchic system that we're living through right now?
It is. And I take that study by Matthew Gillens and Benjamin Page from Princeton and Northwestern University, as I recall. It's featured in my book. I mean, this is what's interesting is Chris kind of only told half the story. They looked at the period before the Reagan Revolution, prior to the mid-1980s, and they found that most of the time, what the bottom 90% of Americans wanted got translated into actual legislation. And that's how we got Medicare. That's how we got Medicaid. It's how we got Civil Rights Acts. It's how we got long-term unemployment insurance. It's how we got housing supports. It's how we got Pell Grants. It's how we got food stamps. I mean, I could go on and on and on. Since the Reagan Revolution, it's only the top 3% whose desires get translated into a policy. And which is why, I mean, you know, his example with gun control, another example right now would be, you know, the $2,000 a month checks that are scoring very, very similarly, you know, in the 80 and 90% range and even among Republicans in the high 70s. And yet you've got 10 Republican senators who came out today and said, you know, we need to cut that $1.9 trillion plan that Biden is proposing more than in half. We need to cut it by 2/3. Just slash that thing and call it bipartisan. It's obscene. It's obscene.
It is obscene. So today we have, what are your thoughts, Tom Hartman, on Joe Biden meeting with all these Republicans? I get why he's doing it, but it feels like deja vu all over again to me. And that I thought we learned those lessons in the Obama years, that the Republicans may say they want to play ball, but they're not. They don't. And in fact, they are fomenting plans to use redistricting again, probably to win back the House in 2022. They don't plan to work with Joe Biden. And we just went through 4 years of an administration that never once talked about bringing Democrats into any conversation. Do you think Joe Biden's just doing this to get through the process to say, at least I tried?
I think that as a politician and as president, he has to be willing to meet with, you know, other politicians on the national stage, in appropriate venues. It doesn't mean he has to do what they say. And my understanding is that he intends to listen politely and then just do what he's going to do. If anything other than that happens, I'll be profoundly disappointed.
You and me both. All right. So back to the oligarchs. Am I you say in the book that this is the third go round, basically, of an oligarchic takeover of the American system as of government as we are. Do I have that right?
Yeah, it's the third attempt.
We
fought a war against oligarchy. That's how we became an independent country. But then that form of oligarchy was called monarchy. Mm-hmm. And then what happened in the early 1800s was the hardest part of producing cotton, the giant bottleneck in cotton production, was extracting these seeds from a wad of cotton. You know, when you pick the cotton bolls, they're filled with these seeds that are stuck to, you know, hundreds of little threads of cotton. And it takes a long, long time to clean cotton. And so in the late 1700s, the cotton gin was invented. Eli Whitney invented it. And that cotton gin allowed... It was like a giant cylinder made out of screen, and it had little hooks that reached in and grabbed cotton fibers and pulled them out and left the seeds behind.
Right.
And one cotton gin could do the work of 50 enslaved humans. And so what happened was the large, wealthy plantations bought these cotton gins. They really came on the market in a big way around 1815. And by the late 1820s, the large plantations had just economically wiped out all their small competitors because they could drive down the price of cotton. They were literally 50 times more productive. And the result of this, and they turned their own, you know, their own neighbors who were running small cotton operations into sharecroppers. And I'm talking about white farmers here. Mm-hmm. And so what happened was the South essentially got taken over by a group of oligarchs between 1830 and 1845. And they seized control of the political processes in virtually all the Southern states. They seized almost complete control over the economy. And they had been running since the founding of the Republic a police state. You know, the militias in those states were slave patrols, for example, and, you know, slavery was an institution there. And so they decided that they didn't like having a democracy next door, you know, and they didn't, it was a bad example. And slaves were fleeing and all this kind of stuff. And so they declared war on us. They separated from us and declared war on us. And we beat them back and we took away their plantations. The largest plantations, Parchman in Louisiana, is now a state prison because the 13th Amendment didn't actually end slavery. It simply limited it to people who have been convicted of crimes, literally, right in the 13th Amendment. Slavery shall not exist except as punishment for crime. And the Robert E. Lee's plantation is now referred to as Arlington National Cemetery.
Wow.
You know, so we took them down. And then a new group of oligarchs emerged in the 1870s, 1880s, 1890s as a result of the Industrial Revolution, the railroad oligarchs, the oil, you know, the Rockefellers and the Goulds and the Morgans and the Pierpoints and on and on, right? All these rich guys, banking and oil and steel and Carnegie.
Right.
And they crashed the economy in 1929. and which opened a space for Franklin Roosevelt to come in and declare war on them. In fact, he famously said, "They hate me and I welcome their hatred."
Right.
And he took them down a huge peg with a top 91% income tax rate and Teddy Roosevelt's inheritance tax or estate tax. And they kind of stayed put, you know, in fact, right up until the early 1980s. From 1940 until 1982, the middle class, the basically the middle 60% of the bottom 90%, they were growing in both income and wealth more rapidly than the top 10% or even the top 1%. Wow. So then Reagan came in, of course, and took the top income tax rate, which at that point was 74%, the top tax bracket, and dropped that down to 25%. And boom, the billionaires are back, right? The oligarchs are back. And that led straight to the study that Gillens and Page did that Chris Hayes was quoting in your clip
right.
a little earlier.
Now that
this
was from
dealing with another generation of oligarchs.
Yes. Now that was from 2014 though, but I remember discussions about the oligarchy mostly from 2010. That's when I remember the word coming back at us, because 2010, January, that's when the Supreme Court ruled on Citizens United and basically codified what I learned from you, Tom Hartman, was that the idea that corporations are people was never actually a Supreme Court ruling. It was a note by a clerk in a Supreme Court decision.
Yeah, John Chandler Bancroft Davis, the former president of the B&O Railroad and the son of the governor of Massachusetts, one of the richest men in America, was the clerk of the court. And he added that to a commentary called a headnote on a Supreme Court decision. And then the idea that money is speech, which is the other half of
right.
that, was ratified, as you said, by Citizens United in 2010. That idea came about in 1976, and that greased the skids for the Reagan Revolution. In 76, with Lewis Powell now on the Supreme Court, for the first time in American history, ruled that if an individual billionaire owns an individual politician so completely that that person would not be able to hold office without them, and that politician regularly sponsors legislation and votes in ways that would be of benefit to that billionaire, we used to call that corruption or even bribery. The Supreme Court ruled in 1976 in a case called Buckley versus Vallejo that was in fact free speech. Money is not money, it's speech. And then 2 years later, in an opinion actually written by Lewis Powell, the Supreme Court ruled that they could extend that logic based on that 1886 Santa Clara case that we were talking about a minute ago. They could extend that logic to corporations as well. And then what that did is it just opened up a floodgate of cash that the Republican Party just gimme, you know, just took. And that coasted Ronald Reagan into the White House in 1981. The Democratic Party at that time largely ignored that because they were so well funded by the unions. At that time, a third of America had union jobs. And so the middle class, the working class, was funding the Democratic Party via their union membership. And which is why Reagan, one of the very first things he did in 1981 was declare war on unions in America. It was an explicit effort to defund the Democratic Party. And in fact, I published a piece over on Medium.com a couple of days ago about it's time to defund the Republican Party, to turn the tables. It's
yeah.
actually a way to do that.
No
but
kidding.
It worked.
Now,
I mean, he so completely gutted unions in 12 years, him and Bush, that when Clinton ran in 92 for president, the unions could no longer afford to fund a presidential campaign. And Clinton had to go hat in hand to the banks and the insurance companies.
Wow. Wow. Okay. So you see, it's fascinating. This is all connected. Then in 2010, so the year that Citizens United, they basically codified that those notes into a Supreme Court decision. Bernie Sanders was leading the charge. I remember Bernie back in 2010, both on your show when you used to do brunch with Bernie and other places. He'd come on the air with me back then too. He back in December of that year, he did an 8.5-hour filibuster over the year end. This is going back a long ways, and my memory is not what it used to be. But the tax deal at the end of 2010. After Republicans won so much in the midterm, it was called the Tax Relief, Unemployment Insurance, Reauthorization and Job Creation Act of 2010. And it proposed extending the Bush era tax rates. And Bernie said, no, that this favors the wealthiest Americans. He said, enough is enough. How many homes can you own? The bill passed anyway. Bernie's 8.5 hour speech, by the way, was published into a book. But this was, I remember the discussion of we are now living in oligarchy was front and center. And nothing has changed. Here we are in this pandemic. And the whole economy tanked. Everybody stayed home for a few months. The people who got rich, though, the billionaires, what, in some cases, like doubled or tripled their money. Jeff Bezos went from an obscene amount of billions of dollars to an incredibly obscene amount of billions of dollars. I mean, they profited off of the pandemic, off of the rest of us really hurting. This has only made the oligarchy worse, didn't it?
It did. And, you know, these are structural things that were put into place by Reagan. The ability of corporations to buy back their own stock was illegal before Reagan, compensating CEOs with stock so that they don't give a damn about their employees or even their companies. They just you know, want their stock price to go up. That was legalized, decriminalized by Reagan. Jeff Bezos, he's probably one of the least toxic of the billionaires because he's actually offering a product or service. It's highly monopolistic. He's conducting himself in a way that would be illegal in most other developed countries, but it is perfectly legal in the United States. The ones that horrify me are the ones that have been outed by this GameStop thing. You know, where basically they're just parasites. These hedge fund billionaires that were $2, $3, $5, $10, $20, $30 billion, and they literally, they don't give one vaccination to a child. They don't produce, you know, one toy or productive product in our economy. All they do is move money around and make bets. They're gamblers, and some small timers figured out how rigged the game was and just stepped in and said, okay, two can play at this game. But it reveals, and I think Bernie's been all over this, by the way, it reveals how, as has Elizabeth Warren, it reveals how corrupt our system is. And it's been corrupted by oligarchs, by very, very wealthy people buying politicians because the Supreme Court told them they could.
Wow. So Tom Hartman is with us. His new book is The Hidden History of American Oligarchy. And the whole GameStop thing, for someone like me, who I'm not an investor, I don't have money, and even if I did, I probably wouldn't put it in the stock market. This, it seems to have exposed a huge hole in their system. I guess they never thought anyone would try to game them this way. But this was a bunch of people, not very skilled investors. These are people on Reddit who maybe are day traders and play the stock market, but they decided they wanted to take down some of these hedge funds who were shorting the system, basically betting that these companies are going to fail. That's what they're doing. They're profiting off of the people that are losing their livelihood due to the pandemic, mostly right now, right? I mean, do I have that wrong?
No, you're right. Back in the 80s, when the whole idea of a hedge fund emerged, in part because of Reagan's deregulation of Wall Street, the idea was that you would create an investment fund that during periodic recessions, you know, one of the features of capitalism is that every 6 to 10 years, there is predictably a recession. And that during those recessions, they would be countercyclical. They would bet on, they would invest in normal stocks, but they would also bet on some stocks that they considered vulnerable to recessions in ways where those stocks would make so much money during the recession that the money they lost on the regular stock market would be more than made up for. So you could invest with your money with a hedge fund and know that, you know, whether it was good times or bad times, you weren't going to make as much during good times, but you weren't going to lose anything during bad times.
Right.
That all got blown to hell, you know, in the last 25, 30 years. And hedge funds just became, you know, pure betting operations where through their own power, you know, if a hedge fund, and this is Elon Musk has been fighting this battle for years now.
Right.
The hedge fund comes in and says, okay, we're placing $1 billion bet that this company is going to go down in flames. Guess what happens? Everybody's like, well, better sell that stock. And sure enough, that company goes down in flames. So they have so much market power that they can create self-fulfilling prophecies and then make billions of dollars off them. It's a scam and it should be illegal.
It is. But then I think to make matters worse, you have these new companies that have popped up like the E-Trade and the Robinhood, whatever, that allow you to purchase small amounts without commissions that enable these people to be able to do this. That said, wait a minute, something's going on here. We're going to halt trading. So the big hedge fund guys could still buy and sell those stocks, but the little Reddit guys who did this whole thing were frozen out. How is that?
Right.
I mean, that just...
Well, it's because the billionaires basically said to Robinhood, this app that you're describing that allows you to trade options with no commissions, the billionaires basically said to them, if you guys want to maintain your seat on the stock exchange or your ability to buy and sell stocks, you better lock out these pesky people who are costing us money.
Wow. And they did cost them a lot of money. There were some hedge funds that maybe saw their holdings cut in half because of the
money. One guy lost $3.5 billion, one hedge fund manager, which tells you how highly leveraged these guys are. This was on one stock, right? On GameStop.
Wow.
And what a just an absolute friggin' scam the whole thing is, Nicole.
It really is. Well, and others have said that. I think, well, going back to Bernie again, he's called the Wall Street out as a big scam. That's their business model.
Yeah.
Right.
This is oligarchs not only have their own way of making money with money that you and I couldn't do. We can't make a market. We can't throw a $1 billion bet up or down on a stock and then cause that stock to change as a consequence of that. But they also have their own tax bracket. You know, if you make your money sitting on your butt around the pool waiting for the dividend checks to arrive in the mail, you pay less than 25% income tax. If you make your living doing a radio show or a TV show or a podcast, or if you make your living, you know, laying bricks or whatever, you know, you can pay up to 36, 37, 38% income tax. I think it's 1 or 2 points lower now as a result of the Trump tax cuts. But you know what I'm saying? The capital, they've got their own tax rate.
Yep.
They've got their own prison system.
Yeah.
You know, when rich people go to jail, they don't go to normal jails.
Nope.
They go to these country club jails.
Right.
I mean, they've got their own airports. They don't fly through normal airports. They don't go through security.
They get to go to the front of the line to get the COVID vaccines.
Yeah.
And not only that, the latest is with this whole COVID relief bill that the $1.9 trillion package that the Democrats want to put through. All of a sudden, the Republicans are screaming, well, we don't want a family that earns $300,000 with three kids to be able to get this money. Where was that concern with this tax cut that only helped the billionaires?
Well, this is an old scam that the Republicans have been running for years and years. They were, you know, they tried to do it with Social Security.
Yep.
They tried to means test Social Security. In fact, they tried to do it dozens of times. George W. Bush ran for the House of Representatives in 1977 on that platform, means test Social Security. Rich people shouldn't be getting Social Security. And the reason why they want to means test things, another means testing is where, you know, if your income is above a certain point, you no longer have access to food stamps, housing support, unemployment insurance, whatever it may be. The reason they want to means test it is once you've established a means test, once you've established that some people are in and some people are out, then you can start sliding that bar down. You can say, well, you know, we don't want people making $300,000 a year to be getting any, you know, help or subsidy from the government. Well, next year it'll be $100,000 a year. And then the year after that, it'll be $60,000 a year. And the year after that, it'll be $30,000 a year. And pretty soon you've turned a program that used to be a good program that helped generally people out all across the country. And yeah, you know, a few rich people got a little money, just like, you know, I do from Social Security. Not me, I'm not a rich person, but, you know, everybody does some Social Security.
Right.
Rich, you know, maybe Charles Koch gets a Social Security check.
That's right.
You have, you know, 2 or 3 or 4% people who really don't need the money are getting it, but there's no way to dial it back so you can screw more and more people.
Right.
And that's why they want to introduce means testing. And if these, quote, conservative Democrats like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema go along with this, you know, they're just buying into, you know, a scam the Republican Party has been running for almost 100 years.
Yeah, no, it's frightening and it's sickening. I mean, it really is. When you think, I look at this and they're so intent on making sure that some people don't get the money that they're not entitled to because they may be earning too much. So to keep that those people, you know, $100,000, $200,000 a year earners from getting the money that, God forbid, they shouldn't have, we're going to make sure the guys who, you know, are really hurting, they don't get it either. Because, you know, nobody gets it because we want to make sure these people don't get it.
If you're drawing a paycheck, you pay Social Security tax on the first $120,000, more or less, that you earn. Mm-hmm. But after that, you pay zero.
Nothing.
Which means, and they fight to keep that in place, right? Billionaires don't want to pay Social Security taxes. Oh, no way. You know, because they've reverse mean tested that.
That's right.
So
that's
if you're rich, you don't have to pay the tax, only if you're making less than $120,000 a year.
Right. I got to say, because we're coming close to the end of the hour, and you should read The Hidden History of the American Oligarchy, because you do have some, you know, solutions. You do have a chapter, part six, on how to break the oligarchy and restore democracy. But I do want to ask you about this, because very early in the book, I mean, on page six, a line just jumped out at me. You wrote, "So much damage has been done to America in the past 40 plus years that stopping tyranny and dismantling oligarchy will be a huge undertaking. The good news in that regard is that typically major shocks bring about rapid and major change." That they do, but then I go back to Naomi Klein and the shock doctrine, and major shocks don't often bring about horrific change, bring about more of this with the oligarchs. Look at New Orleans after Katrina, where the big money interest took over everything. So, yes, shocks bring about change, but we can't guarantee what kind of change that'll be.
Well, it's a matter of scale. You know, the shock doctrine, Naomi Klein is absolutely right on that. But it generally applies to less systemic shocks. If you look at the history of America, there was a major depression in 1770, and there have been entire books written on how that economic crisis led right to the American Revolution. Abraham Lincoln rushed to a bank in August of 1856 after he'd been paid by a railroad for over a year's work. It was several thousand dollars. And converted it to cash immediately, which was a really good thing because a week later, virtually all the banks in the northern part of the United States failed in 1856. And that Great Depression of 1856 helped lead to the American Civil War. Mm-hmm. You had the Great Depression of 1929 through 1933. It was referred to at the time as the Republican Great Depression. And that led to Franklin Roosevelt and those kind of shocks. And here we are now, with the second Republican Great Depression. And I think it's waking people the hell up. And it's so systemic and it's so large and it's so undeniable. And in the midst of it, the average American is starting to realize the multiple cons that the GOP have been running on them for, you know, a century now.
Right.
Oddly and interestingly, each one of those were about 80 years apart.
Huh. Things happen in cycles. But what I'm concerned about is we're coming off of, well, we're still in the midst of one of great shock. I mean, this is a huge shock, the pandemic. And I don't know how the Spanish flu of 1918 affected things. But the other shock is Donald Trump and the 4 years of tyranny under him. It's the only way I can look at it. I think we're all recovering from that, slowly coming out of the crisis that was. But there, it's going to have aftershocks that linger for years. These are two major shocks to our democratic system. I hope we can recover from them. But my first, you know, the first look at the effects is the rise of the billionaires' wealth through the pandemic.
Sure.
And not much help for the rest of us. So I don't know if Joe Biden can be FDR. He threw out the name once or twice and put his picture in the Oval Office. Tom, do you have any hopes along those lines?
I am very hopeful. And Biden is talking and so far acting in ways that are far more progressive than either Barack Obama or Bill Clinton.
That's true.
He's reaching back to Lyndon Johnson and the Great Society. And that's a good thing. And we need to do everything we can to encourage him and support him in that. Which doesn't mean that we don't hold him accountable when he screws up.
Right. Anyway, there's something about oil leases that I need to look into and deal with later in the week, which but obviously we're not going to like everything he does. So far, so good. We just need him to go bigger and bolder and hope that this meeting today with the 10 Republicans is just a gesture to say, look, I'm giving you a chance, and now we're going to move on and do what's right for the American people.
Yep.
Knocking on wood laminate. Tom Hartman, find him on the radio every day, noon to 3, out here on the East Coast, everywhere. And, of course, the book, the new book, The Hidden History of American Oligarchy. Thank you so much, Tom. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks, Nicole. It's great to see you again. It's always an honor to be on your show.
For me, too. Thank you. We'll talk again soon, I'm sure, when the next book comes out. All right. And with that, we're done. Thanks, everybody. I will see you tomorrow. It's Tuesday. Gotta Laugh will be here. And we will try to laugh a little bit because it's necessary. Bye.